And some of the trials, though, build in the fact that you could receive the experimental therapy later. I don't know that that was the case here, but that sometimes can mollify those issues. So, Wells, again, getting back to the point at which you're thinking about systemic therapy, maybe you can talk about some of these other strategies that are used. And when is it that you decide, I mean, we need to use systemic therapy?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I really pay attention to, and we have a weekly multidisciplinary liver conference where we have our transplant surgeons as well as our surgical oncologists, interventional radiology, hepatology, et cetera. But first thing I focus on is I do not want to ruin the chance for a transplant, especially if you're a younger patient. The main thing you do not want to do is do a biopsy, because many programs will refuse to do a transplant on a patient if you've done a biopsy due to concerns about seeding the tumor in other areas of the body. So if it's a younger patient, especially 50s or below, if they're in good health, if the AFP is greater than 200 or greater than 400, depending on the guidelines, and it has classical imaging characteristics for an HCC, I do not biopsy that patient until I talk to a hepatologist or a transplant surgeon, because I really don't want to make that mistake, because those patients can live for decades with the liver transplant. So that's job one.
Before you go on, could you just clarify what AFP is?
Sure. So AFP is alpha fetoprotein, which is the classic tumor marker for HCC. Not all of them have a high AFP, but if they do and you have what's called a washout on the imaging, sort of a classic appearance that the radiologist will tell you, you really don't have to biopsy those patients and you can simply treat them. Now, of course, you may want to get biomarkers for a trial down the line. So once they're not a transplant candidate, then I might say, okay, we're going to go do the biopsy because we want to find out this molecular information. But I just avoid doing that until I make sure that my transplant hepatologist has taken a look. And if you have one lesion less than 5 or 6 centimeters or 3 lesions less than 3 centimeters, and you also get points for the amount of cirrhosis you have, that patient might be a transplant candidate. And we're also doing liver donor transplants. We do over 120 in our program, either cadaver or living donor transplants. So that's sort of the main thing to start with. Then after that, to be honest with you, I'm often trying to make sure the interventional radiologists are kind of looking at the big picture, because I often find in second opinions, they're not doing scans of the lungs, for instance, and so they'll do taste, and then suddenly there'll be some lung nodules. And had they looked, you know, before, you have to make sure that you're kind of looking at the big picture, because everyone kind of focuses on their area. But there's certainly a role for transarterial therapy. And if you can shrink a solitary lesion, you may take a patient who is not a transplant candidate and make them a transplant candidate. So again, having that transplant evaluation for a younger patient is critical. Of course, once it's widespread, then you're really thinking more about systemic therapy. And what I'm trying to do in our program, to be honest with you, because sorafenib was the only drug for so long, and the hepatologists and folks would say, that doesn't work all that well. It's so toxic. I see patients, they can't walk. And as Melanie said, they're tired. They've got diarrhea. Why are we going to send to medical oncology? Why bother? You know, we should just do what we're going to do and then send them to hospice or something. That's totally changed, because now we've got all these newer therapies. Immunotherapy, when it works, it can work for long periods of time. So what I'm finding that we're doing in our program is really educating our interventional radiologists, our hepatologists, and ultimately the patients, to let them know that, no, we've got all these newer drugs and targeted therapies, and they're well tolerated. Cost benefit is much better for patients. And so I think it's important to think about systemic therapy earlier than we have in years past.
So Philip, can you talk a little bit more about TACE and other intrahepatic treatments for HCC and how you decide, you know, before, I don't think sorafenib shrunk tumors too much. You know, people stayed stable. Now you have this new therapy that they actually shrink. But can you talk a little bit about how you decide between whether you're going to use therapy that's directed at the liver as opposed to systemic? I mean, obviously a metastatic disease, but assuming it's in the liver, how do you decide which way to go, Phil?
So if it's in the liver, in my practice, in our practice, the first thing we think of is liver-directed therapy, unless the disease is too extensive, for example, involving one of the major portal veins. Otherwise, we would like to consider first liver-directed therapy, because liver-directed therapy has basis. These tumors you see in the liver, and as Wells mentioned, some of them have the appearance having a lot of vascularity in them. You can use that aspect in terms of treating them, because what it really means is that those tumors like to suck the blood from the arterial system, the hepatic artery, and the normal liver cells require less of the blood from the arterial system, so there's some differential. Therefore, if you give something through the hepatic artery, it will go and kill the cancer cells preferentially. So TACE, for example, transarterial chemoembolization, uses chemotherapy and some embolizing material. Radioembolization uses small glass beads type thing, which is covered by radioactivity, so using radioactivity there. And some people also use bland embolization, which is just trying to clog the artery. So these treatments, I use them obviously only if the disease is limited to the liver, and only if there is limited to the liver, but also it's safe to do it. So if there's a blockage of the portal vein, then it's not safe to do it, and those patients don't do well anyway. And those patients are the ones that I go for systemic treatment. If the disease has extrahepatic metastases, for example, in the lungs, in the lymph nodes, in the mesentery, those patients, I will not do liver-directed therapy, and I will go to a systemic treatment, which will be, at this point in time, the frontline treatment we discussed, atezo and bevacizumab. Some patients may have bone metastases. Again, I mean, if you have metastatic disease, extrahepatic disease, I will not do liver-directed therapy. If you have major portal vein thrombosis or invasion, I will not do liver-directed therapy. Only I will do it in patients who have really, truly limited. Which takes me to one point, which is a very important point. Over the last 2 years, I've been involved with an organization that's looking into the management of HCC, mainly in community hospitals. And HCC is not a common tumor. And therefore, with the more advances we have made in diagnostics and treatment, localized treatment, transplant, newer treatments, it's very important that these patients are discussed in a multidisciplinary manner where they're experts, because it's very easy to really not follow what would be the logical way of treating those patients.
So, Tammy, we were talking about liver-directed therapy and their various types. Just kind of curious how you see people tolerating that.
Fairly well. It's rare that I have a patient that doesn't do well. Chemoembolization versus radioembolization. Sometimes there could be a little bit more fatigue with radioembolization. For the most part, I speak to my patients in a very positive tone that people do really well for the first week or two, some fatigue, some people could have some nausea, appetite loss. We actually used to see all these people 2 weeks after their procedure, do labs, and through the years we found that they ended up being pretty uneventful visits because everyone was doing so well. So we stopped bringing them back so frequently. So generally, they do fairly well. It's rare that someone has a major complication. You know, fever, abscess can be an issue. I think in the past 13 years, I think there was one patient that I could think of. So really infrequent serious complications.